Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having an opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning, Acadiana. Welcome to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber, 133 and 1133 in high definition. If you'd like to give us a call today to talk about anything LSU-related, Raging Cajuns, Saints, Pels, everything in between, pick up the phone, dial the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Coming up at 7:32, we'll get the latest updates on LSU recruiting with our friend Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. That'll be coming up at 7:32. At 8:02, our friend from the Louisiana Radio Network, Jeff Palermo, will be joining us. So we'll have time to take your phone calls today if you'd like. But I want to lead off things with New Orleans Saints training camp. Players reported last Thursday. First full day of training camp was Friday. They put on the pads over the weekend. A lot of things to talk about. Drew Brees was out there looking sharp as ever. Cyril Grayson, former LSU track star, got some reps with the ones during training camp over the course of the weekend. He caught a couple of long balls from Drew Brees. They also used him on end-arounds. He could be a dark horse of making this roster. But it was just good to see the Saints out there. They also opened up the new experiences for the fans where they had the seating covered and they had the mist machines out to help with the heat for all the fans that come out there at the training complex in Metairie to watch the Hoodats get after it. But that wasn't the only thing. So far in camp, the unlikely star early on is an undrafted rookie by the name of Emmanuel Butler. Now, he's had himself a heck of a camp so far. Members of the media have even kind of noticed that he's been standing out. Rod Walker from The Advocate was tweeting yesterday, 3 days in, you'll probably have a hard time finding someone who doesn't say Emmanuel Butler has been the star of Saints camp. Head coach Sean Payton doesn't disagree with that sentiment. He thinks Butler is an intriguing prospect, an intriguing player for this team.
Yeah, I would say yes. There's someone that, you know, he's kind of been intriguing. So he's made a play, a couple plays each day. He's big, and I'm excited.
Turning heads, making big plays each day. Doesn't this feel like this happens every year? Right, especially with the Saints. They always do a very nice job of finding those diamonds in the rough, whether it's late-round selections or guys that go undrafted. Now, before we get too excited, obviously we've got to pump the brakes a little bit here and say, hey, it's the first few days of training camp, right? It's still only the first few days of training camp. But out there with all the vets, out there with perennial Pro Bowlers, all pros, salty veterans making millions upon millions of dollars. The undrafted rookie is making a name for himself. And we talked about how his position was going to be one of interest for training camp. Look, Emmanuel Butler is 6'4", wide receiver. 6'4", 220 pounds. It's a big cat out there snagging balls. We know they're set for with Michael Thomas. That contract negotiations, they will wrap up. They'll get that done. That's your number one. Ted Ginn Jr. still seems to have something left in the tank. He's your most reliable number two target in the passing game. The tight end's going to get some passes. Your running back position's going to get passes with Jared Cook at tight end now. Alvin Kamara is going to man the running back spot. But who are going to be those other wide receivers? Those are our big question marks, right? Is it going to be Tre'Quan Smith, the second year pro out of UCF? Is it going to be the undrafted rookie last year who turned heads, Kirkwood out of Temple? They're going to be battling there. Can it be possibly Cameron Meredith, who the Saints traded for or signed as a restricted free agent, rather, last year, coming off an injury, then he gets injured again with the Saints, doesn't make any impact. Rishard Matthews is a veteran guy that they've signed who's played for three or four teams. He's in camp with them too. So wide receiver, there's a lot of question marks there. Who's going to end up making the final roster? Butler, though, has been turning heads. Undrafted rookie. He went to Northern Arizona. But he put up huge numbers there at Northern Arizona. In 45 games, 187 catches for more than 3,200 yards and 33 touchdowns. Once again, Northern Arizona. Not big time college football. But still, this is a young man who was immensely productive in college. Went after it. He has the career and single season records at Northern Arizona. He also earned all Big Sky Conference first team honors twice. But went undrafted. Some people are already drawing comparisons between him and Marcus Colston. This is what the young man, undrafted rookie out of Northern Arizona, had to say about his first few days in training camp with the New Orleans Saints.
Oh, yeah. Most definitely. It's kind of, you know, after the draft, just kind of put a bigger chip on my shoulder. I feel like my entire life, though, I've had kind of a chip on my shoulder, you know, somewhere where I've been overlooked, but somewhere I don't really like, I don't even like to, you know what I mean, sit down and be sad about it. I kind of actually enjoy it because it just pushes me to work harder and be the best that I could be.
You hear it there in the young man's voice. Just pushes me to work harder. The whole thing about being undrafted, not getting a chance, teams not valuing what he did there at Northern Arizona. But he's not making it a negative. He's turning that into a positive, and he's trying to make an impact with the New Orleans Saints. That's the attitude that you want to hear from someone who's undrafted that's trying to make a team. Emmanuel Butler, who at times during the first few days of training camp down there in Metairie at the complex, appeared to have a great rapport with Drew Brees as if they had played together for years. He talked about what he's learned already from number nine just in a few days.
I feel like, you know, he's a great guy, you know what I mean? When I very first came out here, actually, it's kind of funny. I didn't really know what to expect because, you know what I mean, I'm kind of like big-eyed and there's Drew Brees, so I didn't really know what to expect. But after getting to know him, getting to talk with him, you know, he's very down-to-earth, a great guy, great person,
You know what I mean? Very smart. I try to every time I'm around him, you know, I try to just soak up as much information as I can. He's so intelligent. He knows so much about the game. And every time that he can, every chance that he's gotten, he's given me little pieces of advice to help me grow into a better player.
Already taking the advice to grow into a better player. That's what Drew does. We know that. He's the veteran. He works with offensive linemen, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. It does not matter. He's going to do his part to work with those guys. But Emmanuel Butler, turning heads during the first few days of training camp down in New Orleans. Metairie, to be specific. Will he make the roster? I don't know. I think it's too early to tell. Injuries happen. That always plays a role. And then a lot of times these younger players will show flashes early on, and then they kind of disappear, kind of just fade into the ether, so to speak, and then they're cut or they're practice squad players. But definitely a great start for the young man out of Northern Arizona. Doesn't get much better than that, does it? That you can have an opportunity to shine like he is. And he's not the only one. So Grayson, another one, the former LSU sprinter. Now, a lot of the reports coming out about him is that he's going to be a special teams guy. They're lining him up on special teams. They're also using him on end arounds. And he's out there catching balls as well. But the former LSU track star, who has been impressing with his speed, is more than likely going to be making the roster somewhere on special teams. But we talked about Emmanuel Butler. We're talking about other guys turning heads. You know who I didn't hear? Cam Meredith. It's not a good sign. There's question marks on whether Cam Meredith's even going to make this team. Renegotiated his deal, coming off an injury, and he's got competition because while he was out last year, Tre'Quan Smith, the guy that they just drafted in the third round, who they're not going to be cutting, by the way, he's still on a rookie deal. You're going to keep him just for financial reasons. Kirkwood, who you signed as an undrafted rookie, both outplayed Cam Meredith last year. And now you got these other guys coming in trying to take Cam Meredith's job. If there was one player on the roster right now that is in danger of losing his roster spot, number one on that list is Cam Meredith. There's just too many other younger, talented, healthier guys that are cheaper as well. They're just as talented, they're younger, and they're healthy. Not a good sign for Cam Meredith that the Saints have a plethora of these guys in training camp right now. And tops on that list, the guy that's turning the most heads so far during camp has been the undrafted rookie out of Northern Arizona, Emmanuel Butler. We'll see if the young man can keep it going moving forward. We got to hit a break, but more Saints training camp discussion coming up after these messages from our sponsors right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Talking Saints training camp. It began Thursday when players reported. Friday, they got out there, started doing drills, and the weekend was filled with some highlights. We talked about one of those big highlights, and that was the star so far of training camp, Emmanuel Butler, the undrafted rookie wide receiver out of Northern Arizona that's been turning heads left and right throughout the first 3 days of Saints training camp. But he wasn't the only one that was making some noise. No siree, Bobby. How about fan favorite, special team star, third string quarterback extraordinaire, Taysom Hill? That's right, he was out there. He looked good throwing some passes this past weekend. He talked a little bit about how much more confident that he is with a year under his belt, playing in this offense, whatnot. This is what the special teams standout and fan favorite had to say for himself during training camp this time around?
You know, I think, look, I was an undrafted free agent that had a lot of injuries in college. And so as I entered the NFL, honestly, my mindset was to go take advantage of every opportunity and do my best to make a team and then help the team win. So I haven't really taken a step back to look at the situation and what I've been asked to do. I've just tried to take advantage of every opportunity. And honestly, I've had so much fun doing it, and I'm just grateful for the opportunities that have been created for me. Like I said, having four season-ending injuries in college, my mindset looking to the NFL, I knew that someone was just going to have to take a chance on me, and luckily, you know, they did.
Luckily, they did. Look, is Taysom Hill the future quarterback of the New Orleans Saints? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think you do a big disservice if you're the franchise, if you make him the heir apparent to Drew Brees. I just think you got to love the moxie of the kid. You got to love the fact that he's willing to go out there and play special teams and make the tackles and try to block kicks, and that he's learning the playbook, and he just wants to be on the field, right? He's a, what we call the old cliche, he's just a player, right? He's a football player. And that's the kind of guy that you want on your team. You need to have on your team. You need those guys to be on your team. You just need those guys that are football players, that are willing to do whatever to be on your team. And that's what you have in Taysom Hill. Does he have the skill set to lead Sean Payton's offense into the future once Drew Brees, number 9, hangs it up? I don't know. I think the chips are a little bit stacked against him, but he's tenacious. He could do it. We'll have to see. But now he's entering, after already having a training camp and a year under his belt, he feels more confident this time around at training camp. This is what his head coach, Sean Payton, who took a flyer on him, has to say about the young man, Taysom Hill.
Well, his grasp of the offense, his ability to take the play into the huddle, out to the line of scrimmage, you know, get us in the right play. I thought he threw the ball, you know, pretty well the last couple of days. So, and then the things that are harder to see are the things that can happen in a game when a play breaks down and you know, he can advance it. But he's doing well.
He's doing well. They like him. You can tell that they're very fond of Taysom Hill, that they believe that he has a future with this organization. You know, he's asked during training camp, you know, what's your typical practice like for you balancing so many different positions? Because, you know, he's just not a guy trying to make the roster at the quarterback position. He just doesn't have to go to the QB room. He also has to do special teams work. So he's all over the place. This is what he said, quote, honestly, I'd say right now my emphasis is playing the quarterback position, then doing all the special team stuff. I'm really heavily involved in special teams right now, but everything else, I'm playing quarterback. I think at some point that will start to transition where I start to get other reps in different positions and get the reps that I feel like I need, that the coaches feel like I need to be ready to come season. He was further asked about position meetings. How many of those do you have to go to? Really, I just have to go to the quarterback meeting and then the special teams meeting. I mean, that's a totally different mindset that you have to have to be able to kind of toggle back and forth from that. He says, as we get to the regular season, as other things start to become more game plan specific, the meetings that I go to are special teams and quarterbacks as well, but Coach Joe Lombardi takes a step back and he coaches me at those other positions when I'm asked to do that. So he is the Saints' kind of Swiss Army knife player, athletic, gutty, total gamer, type of guy that you love to have, old-fashioned kind of glue guy, right? This is a guy that is going to get a lot of respect from his teammates. They see how much of the work he puts in. Look, anytime you're willing to, as a quarterback, you're willing and you're happy to go play special teams and to go light someone up on special teams, or try to block a kick or play any position, line up at wide receiver, anything, that shows the rest of the guys on that roster that you really, truly give a damn and that you're putting the team first. Now, not every guy on that roster is a team first guy. I don't care how good the locker room is. There's not a team out there at any level that has every single individual on its roster that's team first. Not even the little youth league team, producer extraordinaire Cody Schutz coaches. Okay? It's just not the case. But when you have someone like Taysom Hill on there, it helps. Even those guys, I have to be like, well, damn, look at that guy. He's working his tail off just to be on special teams and to be the third string quarterback or to run the scout team for us. That goes a long way. And now that he's got a year under his belt and he became obviously a fan favorite last year, so much so that some people believe that he's the future at the quarterback position. Stop. Just calm down with that right now. No need to get out of control with that kind of talk. Okay. No need. None of that. But he's a football player. And it's the type of guy that you need. Even if Taysom Hill goes through and never becomes the quarterback and he's only the third string quarterback and is a guy that's a special teams player, it's the type of guy that you need to win a championship. He may not even make a championship play, but he's the type of guy, the type of high character guy, hard worker, versatile player, willing to do anything for the team, willing to do anything for the coaching staff that you need. He's a glue guy, and you need that. So best of luck to Taysom Hill moving forward to see if he can keep that going and keep himself turning heads and lock up that roster spot for the New Orleans Saints. Welcome back to the show. We've been talking New Orleans Saints training camp stars. Manuel Butler, undrafted rookie out of Northern Arizona, as well as another undrafted former rookie, special team star Taysom Hill, that have been turning heads this past weekend down there in Metairie. But I want to take a moment here to talk about baseball and talk about the impact that Tony Robichaud has had on players. Now, Jonathan Lucroy, as we know, played for Tony with the Raging Cajuns. He's been a longtime MLB vet. He's currently with the Los Angeles Angels. He's about to set to begin a rehab assignment after a collision with an Astros player a few weeks ago that broke his nose and gave him a concussion. And he's played for the likes of the Brewers, the Rangers, and now also he's played for the Brewers, the Rangers, the Rockies, and the Athletics, and currently he is with the Los Angeles Angels. But Lucroy is, you know, one of those great former players of Tony Robichaud. And he said something amazing over the weekend about his former coach, who obviously passed away earlier this month, suddenly after suffering a heart attack, went through that procedure. We lost Tony. He's now since been replaced by Matt Deggs, a former assistant coming over from Sam Houston State. But Jonathan was injured a few days before, if I remember correctly, before the funeral or the ceremony recognizing him that was held there at the Cajun Dome Convention Center. And wasn't able to show up, or I think he might have. I'm not for sure. I don't have that in front of me if he did come, because there was some concern that he was still recovering and that he may not be able to show up to pay his respects, but I think he actually did. But Luke Roy delivered a poignant tribute to the man he called coach, to the man who did great things for him in his life. He opened up his heart about his former coach and did so in a letter that you can find on thedailyadvertiser.com. Now, Luke Roy was supposed to deliver a eulogy the night before Tony was laid to rest, but that collision with Jake Mariznick of the Houston Astros changed those plans. He was diagnosed with a concussion and with a broken nose and was unable to attend the visitation there at the convention center. He did make it for the funeral service, though, but was never able to deliver his message. Luke Roy, in a letter that appeared as an ad in the Daily Advertiser over the weekend, a full-page ad he took out in the local paper. It was in Sunday's edition. I'll just give you a little, some excerpts from it, because it's some powerful stuff here. It says, Coach Robe, I had the privilege to play for you from 2005 to 2007. Out of all the people I have ever met, you are one of the most influential, giving, and honorable men I have ever known. Your passing not only was felt by me and my family, but by the 1,154 other boys you coached during your 33-year career. That's not even counting the thousands of others that came across your path through your various speaking engagements, baseball camps, and coaches' clinics. During the last few weeks, as we've mourned your passing, my former teammates and I have been sharing stories of your influence on us, stories about experiences that turned us boys into men. You were a man of great integrity who demanded the best not only on the field but off of it as well. You wanted to make sure that after college was done for us, we had the life lessons and what you called sweat equity to succeed in corporate America. I remember you telling me that you weren't in the business of making professional baseball players. You were in the business of making professional husbands and fathers. Lessons that have enabled many of us to live happy and productive lives after our college baseball careers. Speaking for myself and my baseball career, you gave me an opportunity to play D1 baseball when no other school would take a chance on a 175-pound catcher from Florida. Not only did you give me the opportunity when no one else would, you taught me lessons and gave me experiences that would later turn me into a man with two beautiful children, a wonderful wife, and a 9-year marriage. My story is just one of many. That's just part of it, of this tremendous ad that Luke Roy took out in Sunday's Daily Advertiser. He concludes, on behalf of me and my family, former UL players and coaches, and all of Acadiana and those that were blessed by you, thank you for everything you've done for us. We always do our best to be warriors, not warriors. Mrs. Colleen, Ashley, Justin, Austin, and the entire Robichaux family offer you my sincere condolences. You aren't alone in the feeling the loss of this great man. He truly was a gift from us, from God. Go Cajuns. Jonathan Luke Roy, Luke 14:11. We saw the outpouring of support for Tony in the days and the weeks that followed. You saw the more than 1,000 people show up to pay their respects to him at the convention center. All the people that lined the funeral procession route from Lafayette, from Our Lady of Fatima, all the way to Crowley. Not surprised. And you get a little bit of it here, that even though weeks have gone by, Luke Roy, who paid his respects, he came for the funeral, right? Showed his respect to the family, showed his respect to Raging Cajun Nation, to the UL community at large. Tony's been laid to rest. They've named a new head coach. They even named a new assistant. And yet, here's a guy who's in the big leagues, who's dealing with a rehab assignment, who's trying to come back from a broken nose and a concussion due to a collision at a plate, at the plate, rather, that still has it in his heart and still wants to thank Tony and took out a full-page ad in the Daily Advertiser, the local newspaper here. And he still felt compelled to do that. This is weeks after the fact. Still felt compelled to pay respect to Tony, to still tell him how much he meant to him. He shared another story in the ad that appeared in the Daily Advertiser. Another time you texted me after I was traded mid-season during a rough stretch of my career. What you told me was just a small sample of who you were. You said, quote, "Congrats on the trade. Now keep the blinders on your mule. Always remember that no matter what they do to a $100 bill, step on it, spit on it, crumble it up, it's still a $100 bill. It never loses its value, just like you. Hashtag keep swinging." First of all, only Robe would have came up with something like that about a $100 bill. That's tremendous Robism there. No matter what they do to a $100 bill, step on it, spit on it, crumble it up, it's still a $100 bill. He's not wrong. And that just gives you an idea of the caliber of man that Tony Robichaud was, because here's a guy that he's no longer coaching. Here's a guy who's a professional athlete, and yet Tony still took the time out to reach out to one of his former players who he knew was probably down because he was suffering through a slump in his career, so much so that he got traded. The team that he was playing for no longer valued him as a member of their team and dumped him off. Now, Lou Croy's been able to turn things around. He's got his career back on track. But Tony still took the time out to coach, to mentor, to develop. Jonathan Lucroy's not even in his dugout anymore, and he still took the time out to do that. He still took the time to keep coaching these young men. That gives you a glimpse right there of why so many of his former players were so moved about his passing, that had to express themselves, who had to talk about just the impact that Tony made in their lives. Because of stuff right here, that kind of stuff right there. Cody Schutz, I have to ask you, producer extraordinaire. You hear this, you've been coached, you played sports growing up, didn't turn into anything on the collegiate stage, obviously. But you hear this, what would you do if a former coach of yours, years later, just sent you a message and texted you when something happened with you, and you hadn't seen them, you don't see them on a regular, everyday basis, and yet they reach out to you to give you that kind of motivational kind of speech? How would that impact you?
It would tell me if there was any question in my mind, if there was any thought that whoever my coach was, specifically in Lucroy's case, Tony Robichaud, you know when you're playing for him, you hear a lot of guys, they say things like, Coach Robichaud, he coaches men. He doesn't just coach baseball players. He does it,
turns
the
boys into men. Yeah,
right. We know how that story goes. I think if I had moved on, made it to the big show and was doing my thing and this and that, and I get a message from Coach Robichaud along those same lines, that just confirms for me, drives home, you know, establishes what I already knew, does all of those things to tell me that Coach Robichaud, Tony Robichaud, is exactly the man that I thought he was, the man that everybody says he is. It's not just a front. It's not just a thing that he does when he has the Raging Cajun jersey on or the shirt on or whatever. It's a thing that he does for the people that come into his life that he cares about and that care about him. It goes beyond just what happens here in Acadiana. And again, Luke Roy knew that all about Coach Robichaud already. I'd be willing to bet any amount of money that he knew that already. But when you get that message again, when he reaches out to you, you know, unprovoked and just on his own out of the kindness of his heart, then that just really shows you exactly the type of man Coach Robichaud was.
And it shows you the caliber of coach, right? And that he took coaching very seriously. Like it meant a lot to him that he took it seriously, and it actually meant something to him. It was more, he always used to preach this, but this is just an example of when Tony spoke, it was the truth. It was honesty. It wasn't BS. It wasn't coach speak. It actually meant, the wins and losses meant far less than making sure that he took a timeout to let one of his former players know that, hey, you're still worth something. Don't get down on yourself. Keep working, keep grinding, and you're going to succeed. That's what the coaching is, and that's what it meant to be coached by Tony Robichaud. And thanks to, a big thank you to Jonathan Lucroy for taking the time out to share that memory and to share it with everyone here in Acadiana by taking that full-page ad out in the Daily Advertiser in this past Sunday's edition. We got to hit a break right now, but when we come back, we'll return to some Saints talk. That's right. We're going to talk a little bit more Hoodats training camp after these messages. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. And we're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over-the-air 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Just wrapped up a terrific conversation about the impact Tony Robichaud had on his players, and that's once again was brought up this past weekend when Jonathan Lucroy, current catcher for the Los Angeles Angels, on a rehab assignment to recover from a concussion / broken nose he suffered during a collision a few weeks earlier. Still, despite coming and showing his respects at the funeral and expressing himself in social media and with media members, still felt the need to take out a full-page ad in the Daily Advertiser thanking Coach Robe and everything he did for him, not only as a player, but as a man. Some powerful stuff there. But we began today's show talking about New Orleans Saints training camp. Players reported on Thursday. They got to work on Friday, so we got 3 days in training camp. The fans were out. They got to see the likes of fan favorite Taysom Hill out there throwing balls, catching balls, working on special teams. I'm pretty sure Taysom Hill's responsibilities is also making sure Drew Brees has water. I'm not for sure. He's probably a water boy, too, and is happy to do it. I would be willing to bet you. But I want to talk about something else. I want to talk about Breezy. If I told you, Acadiana, that the person with the most flashiest, gaudiest-looking, over-the-top cleats in the New Orleans Saints locker room, who would you guess? Cody, you can chime in here. You would guess probably what? Michael Thomas, Alvin Kamara?
Alvin Kamara, yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It was number 9 yesterday. Because your boy, Drew Brees, went out and wore a pair of custom Nike Lunar Superbad Pro TD cleats that are custom made by Louis Vuitton. Drew Brees, the workhorse, blue collar leader of the New Orleans Saints, was rocking custom Supreme Louis Vuitton cleats at Saints training camp. When I saw them, I was like, and they just look absolutely ridiculous too, by the way. They're red and they're all bright and they got gold on them. They got just the word supreme written on the side for no good reason. Now, look, Drew is known for wearing custom cleats, and they usually honor some personal aspect of his life, his family's military service or his foundation that he and his wife created, or his children, or honoring the late owner, Tom Benson. Breeze, however, opted for a more fashion-inspired look for his cleats during the Saints' third day of training camp in Metairie on Sunday, with those custom Nike Lunar Superbad Pro TD cleats wrapped in the pattern from a popular streetwear label, Supreme Spring 2017 collaboration with French fashion house Louis Vuitton. That's all. Go check them out. It was pretty stunning. You could see them from a mile away at training camp, by the way. They showed up. You're like, what the hell does Drew Brees have on his feet? Good Shoots, we asked people a poll question on Friday before we left. Can we give the final results to that poll question? Because we're ready to put up a new one, my friend.
Right. We asked you if Michael Thomas should be the highest paid receiver in the NFL, paid like a top three guy or a top five guy. 63% take the majority there and say he should be paid as a top three receiver. Second place, 27% say top five, and that leaves the final 9% there saying he should be the highest paid receiver in the NFL.
Nice, nice. We've got a new poll question. It'll be up here in a few minutes. Go to 1037thegame.com. You can vote on that bad boy. We'll send out a link via Twitter. Okay. But our new poll question is Saints related as well, as training camp is underway. Will Emmanuel Butler, that's the undrafted rookie out of Northern Arizona, who's been turning heads this past weekend, wide receiver, will he make the roster? Very straightforward question. Do you believe Emmanuel Butler will make the Saints roster? Yes or no? We'll have that new poll question up for you at 1037thegame.com here shortly. We got to hit a break, pay some bills when we come back. Houston Astros baseball talk right here on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game.
Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk through the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
There's only one out in the inning. It's a 2-2 count to Correa. Bases juiced. Walker delivers. This pitch is hit well. Right field. That ball's high and deep. And it's gone. A grand slam for Carlos Correa. And the Astros lead 6-0, just like that.
10th grand slam of the season for the Astros. That extends their club record.
Opposite field, grand slam for Carlos Correa. 5 RBIs in the ball game for Carlos, and a big lead for the Astros.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. That's free over the air, 24-hour sports coverage. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. You heard there, Carlos Correa, grand slam, first of his career. That's right, all-star infielder for the Houston Astros, coming back off the IL in a big way. He hit that grand slam in Thursday's game. The Astros end up taking 2 of 3 from the St. Louis Cardinals. Now, Correa was also involved in a slide that caused a little bit of controversy. Now, Astros skipper A.J. Hinch says that the Carlos Correa-Yairo Muniz collision looked unintentional. that there wasn't anything malicious about it. And after a night to analyze it, that's what Hinch had to say. He did not view the takeout slide of Carrera as intentional. This occurred the other night, though. Running from first base on a tailor-made double play ball, Muniz made no attempt to slide into second base during the eighth inning of Saturday's 8-2 win by the Stros, a game where Carrera hit his first career grand slam. The Cardinals center fielder became entangled with Carrera and inadvertently spiked the shortstop's right elbow, momentarily causing numbness in his fingers. Carrera was pinch hit in the ninth inning after the incident, but did start Saturday's series finale at shortstop. So he doesn't have to go back onto the IL. There was a lot of reaction on Twitter about that. Oh, God, look what happened to Carlos Carrera. We just got him back, and now he's going to hit. No, he's fine. Just momentarily had some numbness. He was back in the lineup on Sunday. But Carrera coming back into form there with a huge grand slam. And look, going on the road, winning in St. Louis is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. The Cardinals are a very good team. They were previously tied with the Chicago Cubs atop the National League Central Division standings. I'm not for sure if that's still the case. But they're a team that's 56-49. They're a good ball club. But yesterday, the Stros finished them off, taking the third game. And it was a balanced attack like it's been all season long. George Springer, 3-for-5 with 3 runs scored. Jose Altuve, and we'll talk more about the American League MVP coming up here in a few minutes. Jose Altuve, 3-of-5. Michael Brantley, former Cleveland Indian, 2-for-5. We already had Alvarez, the 21-year-old Cuban prospect, who's been phenomenal since being called up, and they've lined him up at multiple positions. He was 2-for-2. Also drew 2 walks. Carrera had an 0-for at the plate, 0-for-5. This is how good the Astros are. One of their star players goes 0-for-5 at the plate. They still win by 4 runs. Just wrap your brain around that. Goes 0-for-5, and yet it does not matter. Carlos Carrera, all-star, shortstop, goes 0-for-5, and they still won by 4 runs. Just ridiculous how stacked and loaded this team is. Yoel Gurriel, kind of an unsung hero for the Astros, he went 2-for-4. Wade Miley on the bump, he did his job. Former Southeastern Lion. Pitched 5 very solid innings, only gave up 5 hits, no earned runs, struck out 6. Then Colin McHugh came in, pitched well-ish. He has very good stuff. It's going to take a while. Him being in the bullpen is the right spot for him. I've said that for a while now. But Colin McHugh gave up a run on 2 hits and 1 inning of work. Hector Rondon came in, clean inning. And then Chris Devinsky came in, gave up a run in 2 innings of work. So the bullpen is still giving up some runs. But I've also come around to this. I have a very old-fashioned way of looking at things sometimes, especially when it comes to baseball. I just don't know if it matters if your bullpen gives up runs anymore. Because the way baseball is going, where your starter's only going 5 innings anyway, and your bullpen's out there pitching nearly half the game, they're going to give up a run or two here and there. Does it even matter? Well, it sure does. It sure does feel like it doesn't. It feels like baseball just doesn't care if the bullpen gives up a run or two. I mean, look at the Astros yesterday. They used 3 guys out of the bullpen yesterday. And 2 of those guys that came in out of the bullpen are the ones that gave up the 2 runs. And it didn't matter. They still won by 4. Wade Miley threw 5 scoreless innings against the Cardinals. His ERA, and this is from friend of the station, Chandler Rome, with the Houston Chronicle. His ERA is 3.06 now, the former Lion star. Just six American League starters have a lower ERA than Wade Miley. That's right. Only six other American League starters have a lower ERA than the 3.06 that Wade Miley has right now. Two of them are his teammates, Garrett Cole and Justin Verlander. Two of them are his teammates. How phenomenal is that for them? How phenomenal is that? Three of the top seven pitchers in the American League based on ERA pitch for the Astros. Three of the top seven. Just absolutely phenomenal stuff. And Wade Miley has been sneaky good. Sneaky good. The Astros, of course, won on Saturday 8-2. That was Carrera's first career Grand Slam. He also drove in five runs. Garrett Cole was pretty good as well. Stros, just keep it going. Just keep it going right along. They're just so talented from top to bottom. But they still need, they're still going to make a move by the trade deadline. A lot of reports coming out of Houston is that they're still going to make a move. They're still going to go after another pitcher. Because as talented and dominant as their top three pitchers are, Verlander, Cole, Miley, they don't have a number four. They don't have a number five. They got the bats, right? They got a murderer's row of a lineup if there ever was one. The only team that can kind of match them lineup-wise in the bigs right now is probably the Yankees, who have just an absolute beast of a lineup. But you need the starting pitching. You need a guy to be able to come in and handle their business. They don't have that number four guy right now, or number five guy. The lineup is there, and they're getting healthy, and Altuve's healthy, and Carrera's healthy, and Springer's healthy. Brantley's been a great free agent pickup. Alvarez has been a tremendous guy that they've called up, the young 21-year-old Cuban prospect. They are loaded in the lineup, top to bottom. But they probably need another arm. It'll be interesting to see where the Stros go from here, because there's not really that big name. There's not really that big kind of sexy name out there on the trade market like it was a few years ago when they were able to poach away Justin Verlander away from the Detroit Tigers. There's not that name right now on the market for that. Now, could the Astros be working on something behind the scenes that we're not aware of? Sure, absolutely. But it's more than likely going to be kind of a middle-of-the-road type of guy. Maybe someone that's a little bit cheaper. Someone that you don't have to break the bank for or give up a ton of young prospects. And now Marcus Stroman is off the table because the Toronto Blue Jays traded him yesterday to the New York Mets. Who the hell knew the New York Mets were going to be buyers? They're one of the worst teams in baseball. They're making trade deadline deals to get guys. They're like, oh, we can turn this thing around in the second half. Not a problem. We're below 500. We got it. Once again, the Mets doing Met things. Now, they state that Stroman, that they're not flipping him into something else. But if you're the Mets, why are you trading for Marcus Stroman? The Yankees and Astros apparently were interested in Marcus Stroman. So he's off the table. Another name to consider, Padres Manuel Margot. He's being rumored to be part of Noah Syndergaard talks. So that would just be like the Mets, though, to deal for Marcus Stroman and then turn around and trade their best player, period, Noah Syndergaard. I don't know. I have no idea what the New York Mets don't have any idea what the hell they're doing either. But the Astros are in tremendous shape, have a strong lead in the American League West. They are rolling right around. They're getting healthy. They could use another arm. We'll see if they make a deal this week. Trade deadline is coming up in a matter of days. We got to hit a break, though, right now. But we're going to keep this Houston Astros discussion coming back right after these commercial messages. As we've been talking about Jose Altuve, he set a new franchise record. We'll talk about it after this break. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Jose Altuve, the heart and soul of the Houston Astros. He spent a good part of this season on the IL. His swing was not right to begin with. He had some power early in the season, but his average was way down, like 75 points down. Had to go on the IL, but he finally appears to have returned to form. And yesterday, he had himself a heck of a game, that three-run home run. Now you're thinking, hey, three-run home run, that's good. But it was far more significant than that. Altuve became the fastest player in Houston Astros history to reach 1,500 career hits. He did so in 1,190 games. So he's halfway to 3,000, which I'm sure the new sabermetrics people will tell me is irrelevant because they've told me every other stat from my childhood from baseball card collecting and watching ball games and filling out scorecards is now irrelevant, like RBIs and strikeouts and all that stuff. None of that matters anymore. And they have all this new methods, this new math calculus to figure out new percentages that matter more than batting average, because 300 hitting doesn't matter anymore. Sorry, got a little angry there for no good reason. Starting off the week strong, I am. But he's halfway to 3,000. And he bested the former record held by the held in Houston Astros lore, Jeff Bagwell, Hall of Famer. By the way, he's in Cooperstown. He passed Jeff Bagwell by 173 games. 173 games. He got to 1,500 hits faster by 173 games. Faster than Jeff Bagwell, who was the previous record holder. Wow, that's crazy to me. Here's a little historical comparison as well, courtesy of our stats department, a.k.a. Cody Schutz. Through 1,190 games, Jose Altuve has 1,501 hits. Career batting average, 315. Runs created, 1,081. The person that I'm comparing him to through 1,190 games had 1,491 in the hits total, 1,491 career hits. Batting average of 309, runs created, 1,162. Would you like to know who the other person is? The greatest hitter of all time, Pete Rose. Jose Altuve has more hits, has a higher batting average through his first 1,190 games than Pete freaking Rose. Wow. Just wow on Jose Altuve. If he can stay healthy, there is nothing that Jose Altuve cannot do. He's already won a league MVP. He's brought Houston Astros their first World Series championship. He's small. He's tiny. He's undersized. But the kid, and he's not a kid anymore, But damn, he can just play baseball. Great hitter. Tremendous hitter. And he is definitely the heart and soul of the Houston Astros. Altuve, 1,500 hits. Just ridiculous. Just ridiculous how good he is. That three-run blast by Altuve, who had three hits in yesterday's game, that was his 16th of the season. 16 home runs for Jose Altuve. If he didn't have such a slow start and he didn't have to go on the IL for a significant portion of the first half, he'd probably be in the MVP conversation. The Astros star second baseman, by the way, has four home runs and eight RBIs over his last eight games. That's what Altuve had to say afterwards. Quote, the game was on the line when I hit the ball. You're not thinking about 1,500 hits. You're thinking about winning the game, end quote. Oh, God, you love that, don't you? You just got to love that. Not thinking about 1,500 hits, thinking about winning the game. And then Altuve further deflected credit for the big game and getting the victory as he gave it all to his teammate, Springer Dinger himself, George Springer, who had three hits in the game. Quote, for me, he's the best leadoff hitter in the game, Altuve said. He's an elite player, a superstar. Nice. Superstar. Hey, Springer is, isn't he? He's the 2017 World Series MVP. He's also second on that Astros all-time leadoff home run list. Hall of Famer Craig Biggio finished his career with 53. Springer now has 31. But Altuve, Carrera's right, Altuve's right, Springer's right. All three of those guys missed significant time. There were games where all three missed for the Astros, and then it was either paired up with Altuve and Springer missing time, and then it was Altuve and Carrera or Springer and Carrera. They're all healthy now. And this team still mowed down the competition, and this team still did so without having a number four starter, a true number four or number five starter in the rotation. And despite having its bullpen give up runs left and right, and yet here they are, one of the best teams not only in the American League, but of all baseball, American or the old senior league. The Astros look like a legit World Series contender, and they're going to add someone by the trade deadline. You just know it's going to happen. Phenomenal. But congratulations to Jose Altuve for reaching 1,500 hits quicker than Pete Rose did and quicker than anyone else in Houston Astros history. We're going to wrap up the baseball talk when we come back after this short commercial break. We'll be talking to our boy Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com. The LSU Tigers picked up yet another commitment over the weekend. We'll talk about it right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. It's time now for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline, though, as we welcome back to the show our good friend, the recruiting extraordinaire, from TigerDetails.com, the one and only Jarrett Rozier. Jarrett, how you doing this morning, brother?
Hey, man, not too bad. Good to be back with you guys. We missed y'all last week when you were traveling, giving folks news from elsewhere.
That's right. It was Sunbelt Media Day last week, brother, so you had the week off. So let's get into it. Recruiting never ends, Jarrett. The Tigers landed, or to be more specific, re-landed another big commitment over the weekend. What can you tell us?
Yeah, so this is, we talked about for a while, Jaquelin Roy, the big defensive lineman from U High right here on LSU's campus, who had committed a ways back, but decommitted at the very end of February and, you know, went through the recruiting process a little bit more, reevaluating some things and had a lot of push from schools all over the country, and particularly all over the SEC, ends up announcing his recommitment as
as you mentioned, to LSU, and I think just absolutely a huge get for the Tigers, one that they felt good about for a while, but certainly good to have it, be announced again that he is recommitted. And I think, Chacola and I talked for months about the piece to this puzzle that LSU is putting together, how big of a piece he is to this already impressive class. We, at Rivals, we had LSU as the number one class going into Friday, and he just kind of extended that lead, I think, is huge for what the Tigers are trying to do on that defensive front for years to come. I think going to make an immediate impact, but be big for a long haul for them as they try to pull themselves back up into that playoff picture and be competing with the Alabamas and Clemsons of the world, not just in the recruiting rankings, but, come January.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, walk me through it. He had been committed verbally before, pledged, then he changed his mind, pulled his commitment. Walk us through that. Why did that happen, and how long ago was that?
Yeah, so he had pulled back on the commitment one of the last couple of days of February. It might have actually even been February 28th. And for him, I think, like with a lot of guys that commit early, when they decommit, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's not still a lot of love and affinity for the program, which they just decommitted, or mean that they're not going to ultimately end up there, so much as just realizing that maybe they want to see a little bit more than they had, gather a little bit more information. And sometimes the way other programs recruit you changes a bit when you are committed, especially if you're a guy like Jaquelin, and he's right here on LSU's campus, and school was wondering, is it a done deal? Are we wasting our time? And so Jaquelin, wanted to take a little step back and go gather a little bit more information before making what ultimately to this point in his life will be the biggest decision in his life, and had a chance to go explore some of those other schools, spent some time at a Texas A&M, at Alabama, Florida, and those were three of the biggest competitors down the stretch for him. He went to Tennessee, which I know, while Tennessee didn't end up being one of those last few teams in the mix, that was an experience that he really appreciated. He loved seeing the program up there, but also just some of the scenery, getting out of Louisiana and out of the Gulf Coast a little bit, which he hadn't had a heck of a lot of chance to do thus far in his life. But he said even when he decommitted, there was still a lot of love for LSU, and LSU stayed on him very well. He has been a huge priority for this class, and he felt that from Coach O on down. He's had a relationship with Coach O since he was a younger player, and O was still coaching the defensive line. And ultimately, nothing that he saw from any of his other schools ended up being enough to sway him from staying really close to home. And I think that idea of being the hometown hero, which you saw LSU football tweet a little video of some hometown heroes on Friday afternoon as well, I think the idea of following some of that lineage and continuing to be the guy for the city that he's been born and raised in and has so many family and fans here, I think was huge for him. But also from the football standpoint, as I mentioned, he's a guy that they anticipate playing very quickly once he arrives to that side of campus and making an immediate impact with some of his size and quickness and versatility on the defensive front.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, this kind of reminds me a little bit of after LSU lost out on Surtain, they end up the next cycle getting, of course, Derek Stingley Jr. They missed out on Ish last time around. Now they get Roy. Is that how you kind of view this as kind of a recovery, a bounce back recruiting cycle?
Not so much. I guess in both of those instances, Sting was going to be a huge priority
regardless. And I honestly had been a huge priority for a while. They'd been recruiting him since the summer before his sophomore year. So he was a guy that long before Pat Surtain Jr. made his decision and kind of surprised some people here in Baton Rouge. Stingley was going to be a guy that they really wanted to be a headliner for their 2019 class. And regardless of who else was on that roster, I think he's also going to show pretty quickly this year why he was that type of a priority that they would want, regardless of what the depth chart might look like. And I think Jaquelin is kind of a similar situation. Coach Orgeron had been recruiting him since he was a young guy. I mean, before, as I mentioned before, O even climbed to the, was promoted to the head coach position at LSU, and was a guy that they looked at for this 2020 class for a long time as being a really key piece. And as they continue to monitor his progress in high school and the way he's matured, both as a young man and as a football player, I think that just further solidified the importance of having Jaquelin Roy in this signing class, you know, regardless of who was in the 19 class or not, or who else was in this 20 class or not. They have several defensive linemen already on board, and they're still in the mix for some other guys. I mean, Jacobian Guillory is kind of the big name that's still out there for that defensive front for LSU. But Jaquelin Roy, I think if you look at all of the guys that are a part of this class and all the guys that they continue to recruit, I'd be hard-pressed to say Jaquelin isn't one of the top handful or so in the importance of getting him locked in and being a part of that class just because of everything he can bring to them on Saturdays in the fall.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier here of TigerDetails.com on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, what I was trying to say is that I think in years past, maybe under the former administration, when they would lose a star guy, a big-time prospect, like a Surtain or an Ish to a rival team, it hurt them. Now it doesn't hurt them. Now they turn right around, and they've already laid the groundwork to get someone else to replace that guy, I guess was my bigger point. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can, as much as these recruiting battles so often seem to come down to LSU versus Alabama or LSU versus another SEC rival, anytime that you can have one of those guys stay in Baton Rouge is certainly big, because that just kind of adds to the sting of it, as you saw with Ish, or as you've seen with some other guys through the years, to know that, okay, they didn't get the guy that they wanted, but also that guy is going to the team that has been kind of the thorn in the side for years now, the better part of a decade now. And so it's certainly great to see one go the other way if you're an LSU fan, and to be able to not have to worry about that. And again, you know, right now for the rivals class rankings, they're leading the way with Alabama trying to play a little bit of catch up.
Talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, I know we've talked about it in the past, but what's changed now? Why does it feel, it just feels organically that LSU is on equal footing with the likes of Georgia and Alabama when it comes to recruiting, keeping the best prospects in the state home? What's changed? Is it the approach of Coach Edo and his staff compared to what it used to be here at LSU? What's changed?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's kind of a variety of things, and you have to give credit to O and really the entire staff that he's put together, and some of the connections that they bring on a national level, and just some of that focus that they bring on a national level. I think, you know, with the adjustment to the recruiting cycle, with the addition a couple of years back to that early signing period, coinciding right on the heels of O taking over the job in a full-time capacity, there were some, you know, a little bit of a learning curve at times in both directions as O, back in a head coaching role for the first time in a while, was trying to figure out how he wanted to approach some things, and, you know, get the staff in place to do so. And then you mix that in with everybody around the country trying to figure out exactly how they're going to handle this early signing period. And now that O and company have their feet under them a little bit and have been here and have a little bit of stability after, you know, some years where there were some people being really critical at times, you know, his first full-time year, there was some criticism. And so I think that, you know, that's something that they got behind them. They really kind of settled in and hit their stride and also got a handle on how to approach this new look recruiting cycle. And you see them go out now this year and really canvass the country in a way that LSU never has before. And to have guys like an Elias Ricks from the West Coast, although he has announced that he's going to play his senior year at IME Academy, or Rakeem Jarrett up the East Coast, you know, Damon Clowney up the East Coast, really just guys from every direction that if this staff this year was recruiting just the Louisiana guys, and when you start to look at some of the rankings, they'd probably still be a pretty highly ranked recruiting class, but it wouldn't look quite the same as where they are right now, where you have a Jaquellen Roy and a Kayshawn Boutte and TJ Finley and all these guys that they have from in-state, but also those top-flight guys nationally that that a little bit of a different approach from Owen Company than LSU has ever seen has been able to add to this really impressive class at this point.
We're talking with Jarrett Rozier of TigerDetails.com right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jarrett, I want to ask you, the performance Joe Burrow last year put on, plus the addition of Joe Brady as the quarterback's coach, quarterback whisperer, whatever role he is with LSU, what kind of impact is that combination having on recruiting when it comes to the quarterback position for the Tigers?
I think that's big. Whether Joe Brady is whispering, shouting, or whatever way he's getting that information across, the players that are on campus right now are extremely energized by the things that are happening with that offense. And the guys that are still making their college decision that have had a chance to come see a little bit in the spring maybe, as well as just have that relationship with some of those players that are already involved, I think some of that excitement is reaching out into the recruiting classes. And I think just the draw of having someone that has been at that next level beyond, you know, a lot of these high school guys, they talk about the next level and they're talking about college, but that next level beyond the next level, the professional ranks, is where most of these guys ultimately see themselves. Certainly guys that are LSU caliber players see themselves playing in the league one day. And so on the offensive side of the ball for, you know, quarterbacks like TJ Finley and Max Johnson and some of the other guys that have been recruited for 2020 and beyond, I think, and, you know, same holds true for the receiving core as well. Rakeem Jarrett is a guy that's committed. Coy Moore is a guy that still out there, but someone that LSU feels good about, a local guy here in Louisiana. I think for all of those guys, as they're figuring out where they want to play their college football, I don't know that without Joe Brady they wouldn't have chosen LSU. You've seen LSU have some success, certainly with the receiving group, and, you know, in some spots with some quarterbacks, at least locally, but not necessarily as much on the national scene as again, we see LSU kind of expanding to. But having Joe Brady on staff certainly bolsters that push quite a bit, and makes it that much more exciting for guys on that side of the football, particularly involved in the passing game, to want to come to Baton Rouge and be a part of the direction that things are going, because the trajectory all looks really positive for, you know, for that program and purple and gold and the nice new locker room.
Jarrett, appreciate the time as always. Why don't you tell folks what you got coming to TigerDetails.com here later this week?
Yeah, I mean, shoot, football's here. You know, Joe Burrow and company will be back into fall camp, by this weekend and starting to look into this 2019 season. season that I think has a chance to be a really good one and you know, not just be really important for where Owen Company are on the field in the fall and moving forward, but for where some of these 2020 guys fall, because, I mean, you and I have talked about before, their success this fall will be big, particularly for those national guys.
Jarrett, appreciate your time. As always, enjoy the rest of your week, my friend, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, bro. Always a pleasure.
Jarrett Rozier, TigerDetails.com, giving us the latest on LSU football recruiting. We got to hit a break. We're going to do some stretching exercises is what we're going to do. We're going to gear up to finish this show strong for you. While we're doing that, we're also going to be paying some bills. So just letting you know. When we come back, though, we'll talk a little bit more college football right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. Hey, guys, just a reminder, Gino Delafosse will be on stage this coming Wednesday, July 31st, as he'll be part of the original Swamp and Roll Music TV show taped live at Black and Gold Casino in Doosan. That's at 7 p.m. It's presented by KDCG. And it's also brought to you by LafayetteTravel.com every other Wednesday evening. It's a free show. You can be on television, and you can watch the produced show on KDCG TV Thursday evening at 6 p.m. or online at kdcg.com. So the original Swamp and Roll show Thursday evening at 6 on KDCG TV featuring Gino Delafosse. Find out more, including schedules, at kdcg.com. Grant Delpit, he's good. You know, only became like the ninth consensus All-American in LSU football history last year's star safety. He's on every awards list, and he added another one over the weekend. He's been named to the Walter Camp Player of the Year Award watch list, which was released by the Walter Camp Foundation, announced that on Friday afternoon. The 6'3", 203-pound Delpit, who will wear the well-respected and coveted number 7 jersey this season, is one of 10 defensive players out of the 40 total players named to the Walter Camp watch list. I would also expect, ladies and gentlemen, Grant Delpit to at least start the season as one of those preseason guys on the Heisman watch list as well. He'll probably be your top-rated defensive player to break through. The only thing against Grant Delpit making his way to New York for the Heisman Memorial Trophy presentation, it's the fact that he doesn't do anything with returns. That's what Tyrann Mathieu was able to do to get himself there. That's what Charles Woodson back in the day did to get himself there as well. The return aspect, Delpit doesn't do that. He's just an absolute monster stud on the back end of the defense. That's going to do it for hour number two. When we come back, we'll talk with Jeff Palermo, Louisiana Radio Network, right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.
Local. We are Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Raging Cajun hoop star Elfrid Payton.
It's exciting to be able to represent, you know, your city, you know, somewhere where you grew up at and put that jersey on, see that it says New Orleans on the front of it. I think it means a lot.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. We are broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on Stadium Network 32.1. You can also find us on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in high definition. Right now, though, it's time for us to head back out to the ARTCO Equipment Hotline as we welcome on our next guest. He's part of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to here every Tuesday evening right here on 103.7 The Game. It's our good friend, the one and only, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm doing well, Raymond. How about yourself?
Doing great. Had a nice weekend. made sure to charge up those batteries because college football season is going to be here any moment, my friend. Let's start off with that. What's the one thing that you're looking forward to most of all with LSU when they open up camp here in just a matter of days?
Well, I think the offense has been obviously the story of the offseason, and what we're going to see with the impact of having Joe Brady on the staff, an offense that's going to line up in shotgun formation, but yet still remain a physical offense where they're going to be running the ball in between the tackles. You're looking for development out of these wide receivers, what you're going to get out of that. Jamar Chase, Terrace Marshall, are those guys ready to make the next step? You return a majority of the starters on the offensive line, but you're still looking at for that group to solidify itself and become one of the best in the league. I thought for much of last season, the offensive line was below average. It's got to be better than that once they obviously go up against the likes of Alabama. So I think still all eyes here on the offense and what it can do. Another season of promises of a great offense to watch, and usually those promises are under-delivered, but maybe this year will be different.
We're talking with Jeff Plaramo here of the Louisiana Radio Network on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, is that what it boils down to for LSU to be able to take that next step to beat Alabama to win an SEC championship to be in the college football playoff? Is it all boiled down to the offensive line protecting Joe Burrow?
Yeah, I think the offensive line protecting Joe Burrow, obviously creating running rooms. I think it needs whatever the run is, 8 in a row, 9 in a row, that Alabama's beaten LSU. I think LSU has gotten whipped along the offensive and defensive lines in all of those games. And then the other separation between LSU and Alabama is quarterback play. This is a coaching staff that really believes in Joe Burrow. This is a guy in Joe Burrow that believes in himself. His teammates believe in Joe Burrow, and so not since probably when Zach Mettenberger was the quarterback that LSU feels like, hey, they got a quarterback that can go out there and win games for them. And, you know, it just kind of remains to be seen whether the offensive line is going to give him the protection. Granted, LSU's plan this season is get rid of the ball quicker. So does that mean this group of wide receivers is able to get open quick, catch the ball, and maybe get some yards after the catch? All that is a question mark, and you have to wait till you see it to believe it.
We're talking with Jeff Plaramo here at the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. He's joining us via the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, we know Jefferson, what he's going to bring to the table. He's going to be the number one wide receiver on this team. But we really didn't see a guy develop as a number two pass-catching threat for this team. Some guys showed some flashes last year. Who do you think could emerge out of that group of others to become the number two or even the number three pass-catching threat for this offense?
Well, I think it starts with Jamar Chase and Terrace Marshall. I mean, these guys were big-time recruits in the 2018 recruiting class. And last year they showed flashes, but not enough, obviously, consistency on the as true freshmen. So that needs to change. That's for sure. I guess probably, you know, D. Anderson or you know a guy like that. Is he such a big target? Is he a guy that can develop and become a more reliable pass catcher? I think that remains to be seen. We've heard a lot about Racy McMath, a guy like that, a speedy guy that can, you just hope that can make some plays for you. So I think those are a couple of other guys that, are on the radar as someone that you would hope can make a step up. But you're right. I mean, they're going to be relying quite a bit on Justin Jefferson to be the guy, but he obviously needs a little help, and it really starts with What are they going to get from a Jamar Chase, and what are they going to get out of Terrace Marshall? If those guys are really good this season, then, yeah, I think this is a passing game that certainly can develop. And, you know, another guy out there is Derek Dillon. There's no doubt that this kid has made some big catches, had a big touchdown catch in the Fiesta Bowl. Obviously, the 71-yard catch and run against Auburn that sparked that fourth quarter comeback. But here's a guy that's played, you know, some 34, 35 games, and he's got fewer than 40 catches during his career. So how much of a jump can you expect from a guy that caught a couple dozen passes last year? You're hoping that you'll see a little bit more out of Derek Dillon this season.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo here, the Louisiana Radio Network, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, let's go on the other side of the ball. You know, we talk how loaded this defense is, led by Grant Delpit and Rashard Lawrence and others. What are some position battles that you're intrigued by, even though as loaded as they are? What are you kind of looking forward to on the defensive side for camp?
Well, what kind of impact can a guy like Michael Divinity have on this team? It's his year to shine. This is a guy at linebacker that's expected to play inside and out. He's a senior. I think he steps up as the leader of that linebacking group after what, you know, Devin White has done for them the last couple of seasons. A guy known as a great communicator on the field, can get to the football fast. You would think he's someone that can really step up his game. Patrick Queen, we got a chance to see him quite a bit last season. And is another guy that seems like he can play inside and outside. And where's his development this season after being kind of a fill-in guy for Devin White last season? Of course, getting the start against Alabama when Devin White was suspended because of the targeting penalty. But he's a guy that, you know, and is also kind of important on, you know, one of these guys that I think could be a guy that could be a bit of a more of a disruptor in the backfield. That's for sure. And he played a lot better. He was a lot more involved, I think, with this team defensively after he got a chance to play in the start against Alabama. So the linebacking position is really the key. And then, you know, they got to nail somebody down there on the defensive line there. Especially nose tackle. Tyler Shelvin has been a guy that's really battled some weight issues. Is he able to? What kind of shape does he come in when he reports for camp? And Ipaka, the kid, the freshman they got out of Utah, he's expected to be a starter this season. So we're anticipating what we might get out of him.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, do you feel like we're going to see more of this offense during fall camp than we did during the spring session?
What do you mean by that?
Well, with Joe Brady. Right. With Brady joining in, they kind of kept all their cards, you know, close to the vest, so to speak, during the spring, really didn't show us anything during the spring game of what the offense is going to be like. Do you expect to see more of what the offense will be during fall camp?
Yeah, it's still going to be tough to say. I mean, as far as the policies, as far as how much the media can watch, I would imagine it'll be pretty restricted once again, and you're not really going to see a lot of team drills going on, a lot more just individual guys and watching guys run routes and catch passes. And so I don't think you're really going to get a full taste of it until the season opener against Georgia Southern.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo here of the Louisiana Radio Network on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Where do we stand on special teams, Jeff? They had a tremendous kicker in Cole Tracy last year, kind of unexpected, and then he just rewrote the record books. Are there question marks on special teams?
Oh, I would think so, especially at kicker. Connor Culp is still with this team. You know, he got a lot of opportunities during his redshirt freshman season, but he missed several field goals, and he missed 3-point afters in his freshman season. So didn't play last year, and now as he enters his third season with the Tigers, he's the most experienced place kicker on the team, and he'll have to battle a freshman that they brought in, that Coach Ed Orgeron has been really high on, for a kid by the name of Cade York out of McKinney, Texas. You know, he's the guy that kicked a 59-yard field goal in the Under Armour All-American game, so obviously has a strong leg. Was 9 of 11 as a field goal kicker in high school. So this is he's supposed to be really the next best kicking prospect. But, you know, when Connor Culp came to LSU, there was a lot of excitement about him as well, if you're into the excitement level of place kickers. And then Derek Stingley, what kind of impact are you going to get out of him as a punt returner? Is he going to be the guy that's going to be a threat like LSU's had in years past, whether it's Tyrann Mathieu, Patrick Peterson, Odell Beckham? I mean, those are obviously some huge names that you mentioned in LSU history, but Derek Stingley comes in as the number one recruit in the country and a guy that's very dangerous when he's got the football in his hand. So you anticipate, you would think he's going to handle the punt returning duties, even though he's a freshman, and he's got that game-breaking type of ability. So excited to see what he can do his freshman year.
We're wrapping things up here with Louisiana Radio Network's Jeff Palermo on the Artco Equipment Hotline. Jeff, I'll ask you this. Grant Delpit, ton of buzz about the young man. He's going to wear number 7. We know what kind of season he had last year. Without being part of the return game, any possible way Grant Delpit, if he has a monster season, ends up in New York for the Heisman ceremony?
That would be pretty tough. I mean, I think he's going to have a really big season interception-wise. I'm talking like 7 or 8 interceptions. He's going to have a bunch of sacks, forced fumbles, really be a guy that makes big impacting type plays, much like Tyrann Mathieu did. And Tyrann Mathieu also had the ability to return punts, so that helped his cause. So if you're just strictly a defensive guy, I mean, I think the numbers just have to be impressive because right now the Heisman Trophy has really become who's the best quarterback in the country, who's putting up the biggest stats. And the way college football is now, where these quarterbacks have the ability to throw for a bunch of yards, run for a few hundred yards, and win a bunch of ball games, it's just tough to compete with that defensively. Now, that's not to say he can't be a finalist if he puts up some big numbers. Again, I think 6-7 interceptions, heck, maybe even a couple of touchdowns on returns. You know, leading the SEC in tackles, if that's possible, or at least being in the top 3 or 5 there, forcing fumbles, just has to really stuff the stat line for him to get a chance to be, have a chance to become one of the Heisman Trophy finalists. But as Ed Orgeron said in spring meetings or in the SEC media days, he feels that Grant Delpit is one of the top returning defensive players in the country, and who can argue with that? I mean, he's a top 10 draft pick, guy with tons of talent, had big numbers last season. We'll need to have even bigger numbers this year in order to be a finalist for the Heisman.
We're talking with Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network and co-host of Tiger Rag Radio right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jeff, we'll close things out with this, brother. What do you guys have on tap tomorrow night for Tiger Rag Radio?
Well, I think, you know, with LSU picking up another commitment on Friday into Quillen Roy, moving him now up to number 3 in the rankings, I think we'll talk some recruiting. Might get to Quillen Roy on. Also scheduled to hear from Virg Osberry, LSU's Deputy Associate Athletics Director. You know, this weekend is the Hall of Fame, and you got a couple of former LSU Tigers going in, Johnny Robinson and Kevin Mawai. So we'll talk to Verge about that. That's pretty big news for LSU to have two guys in a Pro Football Hall of Fame class. So we'll get into that and obviously preview the start of preseason camp. LSU reports on Thursday, first practice Friday. So football is here, Raymond, and it's a good thing.
It's a great thing, brother. It's a great thing. Appreciate you making time out for us as always. Jeff, kill it with tomorrow night's show, and we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Raymond.
That's Jeff Palermo of the Louisiana Radio Network. He's also co-host of Tiger Rag Radio, which you can listen to live right here on 103.7 The Game. That's right. Tomorrow, after Astros at Indians, which will be Astro launch at 6 o'clock, first pitch 6:10. After that is completed, you can listen to Tiger Rag Radio from 10 to 12 tomorrow night right here on 103.7 The Game. We got to hit a break. When we come back, we'll talk more sports. Woo! right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Great conversation there with Jeff Palermo. If you want to catch any of our conversations with our guest on any of our shows here on 103.7 The Game, just go to 103.7thegame.com, click the On Demand tab, and you have access to all of our shows, past shows, and our past guests. And if you miss those interviews today with Jarrett Rozier or Jeff Palermo, just go to the On Demand, and you'll be able to check that out in no time flat. That's right. We'll take care of you. We're going to take care of you. Cody Schutz, we asked the people, gave them a poll question, sir, earlier today. Can you give us an update on where we stand with that poll question?
Indeed I can. My friend, we asked, do you think Emmanuel Butler will be making the Saints roster after so far he is the standout or the unheard of standout so far at Saints camp? We even heard Sean Payton earlier today say that Emmanuel Butler as a player is intriguing, which I think as an undrafted guy who's just making his way into camp and trying to do anything he can possible to get a spot on that roster, to have the head coach of the team you're working out for call you intriguing, that's good, I think. Very good
yes.
for that young man. Right now, early returns in 100%. Landslide say yes, they like the intriguing factor. I think, personally, if you're asking me why I think it's 100% of the vote so far, it's got to be because, you mentioned it earlier, the Saints have a track record of bringing in guys mm-hmm. from nowhere, so to speak, and becoming, you know, very, very, very good players. So I think with that being the kind of culture that exists around that Saints franchise, I think Saints fans see another name that they've never heard before. They hear head coach Sean Payton call this kid intriguing, and now all of a sudden Saints fans' ears are perked up, and they're, you know, you have to listen now because it's the opposite of, like, the boy who cried wolf. They keep saying, look what we've got, look what we've got, look what we've got, and it's nothing. The Saints continue to say, look what we've got, or maybe look what we've got, and it turns into something. So you kind of have to pay attention to Emmanuel Butler.
I think he has a good chance if he stays healthy and keeps impressing during camp. But they do have a logjam at wide receiver, Cody, right?
But the Saints, they seem to always like to make room for somebody. If they're making room, it's on the offensive side of the ball.
If there was a team in the NFL that would have 12 wide receivers on the roster, it would be the New Orleans Saints, right?
Right.
They would drop a quarterback just to have – they would go with just one quarterback. They wouldn't even keep a backup. Oh, I have another wide receiver? Because right now you got Michael Thomas. Yeah, Ted Ginn Jr. Those guys are safe, even though Ted Ginn's getting a little long in the tooth, so to speak. That said, you still got Kirkwood, who they like, who showed flashes last year as an undrafted rookie out of Temple. You got Traquan Smith, who they took in the third round last year, who showed flashes but wasn't consistent. But wide receiver usually takes a little bit longer to get to that consistent playmaking ability game in, game out. So they like those two guys. They brought in Cyril Grayson, the former LSU sprinter. Now, is he really a wide receiver? Is he going to be more of a return specialist that will be used on inner rounds? That's how I feel he'll be utilized. But I said it. I said it earlier on today's show, and I'll say it again. They also brought in Rishard Matthews, a veteran guy who's played in the league a long time, who they're very high on. It sure does seem like there's not going to be a spot for Cam Meredith on this roster. You don't sign Rishard Matthews like you did, and you don't sign an undrafted rookie like you did with this young man and then go, oh, yeah, we have faith in Cam Meredith. I don't think they do. I just don't feel that they do. I think they feel like I think it's a combination of things. Him getting injured last year is one thing. There could be a possibility that he does not understand the playbook because that playbook is massive and very extensive. And it's a struggle to learn Sean Payton's offense for a lot of guys. I think it's a combination of both of those things. And if you can't stay healthy and you struggle a little bit with the playbook, and other guys are making plays and they're catching on quicker, hey man, survival of the fittest. We're going to keep the Saints training camp discussion moving right along. We're going to focus on the defensive side of the ball when we come back after these commercial messages right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Phone lines are open if you want to talk anything LSU, Raging Cajuns, or Saints training camp related. inquiries, pick up the phone, dial 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. That's the ARCO equipment hotline. We got time for you in between now and the end of today's program. We spent a good portion earlier today talking about offensive guys that have stood out for the Saints so far through training camp, which began officially on Friday. Players reported Thursday. They got to work Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And they'll be taking the field here momentarily down in Metairie at the training complex for today's training camp session. But I want to focus and talk about defense for a moment. The Saints drafted a young man out of Florida named Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. And a lot of people felt that he wasn't needed. With the depth that they have on the back end of the secondary, you got Marshon Lattimore as your number one corner. You got Eli Apple, who you traded for last year from the New York Giants. He's your number two. You got Patrick Robinson coming back. He could be your nickel. You're loaded at safety with Von Bell and the Williams boys back there. Did you really need another versatile defensive back? Well, the Saints thought so, and they took the young fella out of Florida. This is what defensive coordinator Dennis Allen had to say about Chauncey Gardner. Chauncey Gardner Johnson. He raved about him. It's the young man. He's the rookie out of Florida. Dennis Allen also talked about Marcus Davenport. He's the second-year guy that they took out of UTSA. He was injured a little bit last year. And then, obviously, Marshon Lattimore, who's headed into his third season. Now, Marshon Lattimore had a great rookie campaign. Kind of fell off a little bit last year, right? He was inconsistent last year. But he still showed flashes. Now, could part of that Lattimore falling off last year, could it be the fact that teams weren't throwing to him as much because they were trying to attack the other side of the ball? We don't know. Dennis Allen had thoughts about all three players and how much of an impact they're going to play. We'll start off what his thoughts were on Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, the young man out of Florida.
You know, I think one of the things is he's a versatile athlete, you know, so there's a lot of things that he can do and do well. The key is really going to be how well does he get acclimated to the things that we're asking him to do? How much can he absorb mentally? You know, and that'll probably dictate, you know, the volume and the amount that we can get him involved in the defense. So I think it's probably, you know, probably a little early to speculate as to how much or exactly what role that is. But yet, I do think that that's a talented athlete that we can utilize.
That's Dennis Allen, defensive coordinator for the New Orleans Saints, talking about the rookie, who a lot of people expect to play some type of role. He could be the nickel corner for the Saints this year as a rookie, but it definitely especially to see him on special teams without a doubt. This is what Dennis Allen had to say about the star pass rusher, Marcus Davenport. He was a rookie last year, got injured, had to have surgery, slow a little bit of recovery, but they expect him to make a big leap this year. This is what Allen had to say about Davenport.
Well, look, I think I can see a little bit mentally where he's at. He's a little bit more confident in himself. I think that comes with familiarity with the defense and the things that we're going to ask him to do. You know, he fought through the injury last year, which I think limited him some. I think the big thing for him is, you know, I don't think we need to put any outside expectations on him. You know, I think he needs to focus on, you know, his day-to-day improvement, continuing to get better because he's plenty talented enough to be a good player in this league. And I think don't worry about what the end result's going to be. Just worry about the day-to-day improvement, and that'll take care of itself, really.
Day-to-day improvement. So they're not putting a bunch of expectations. Look, they traded away future picks to get him to move up into the draft 2 years ago to get him, right? So there's some expectations. If you're going to spend that kind of equity, so to speak, to get a guy, you expect him to be able to perform at a high level. And expectations will be high on him, but I like the approach that Dennis Allen is making, especially with Davenport coming off the injury. This is what Dennis Allen had to say about his star shutdown corner, Marshawn Lattimore. Once again, he had a great rookie year. Last year, he fell off a little bit. He was still good, but he wasn't as great, wasn't as dominant. This is what Dennis Allen expects to see from Marshawn Lattimore now heading into his third season in the NFL.
Yeah, well, look, I think he's a guy that obviously sees himself as an elite corner in this league. I think we see him as an elite corner in this league. We're always going to give him, the toughest matchup, on game day. And he embraces that challenge, you know, and I think that's what you see in all the great corners. They embrace the challenge. And I think from a physical standpoint, I think it's probably the hardest position on the field to play because, especially in our defense, because we do play a lot of man-to-man. You know, he's in an individual matchup on a down-in and down-out basis. So I think it's a comfort for us as coaches knowing that we have a guy like that that embraces that challenge. And, you got to have a short memory when you play out there on the Autobahn, and he has that. And he's got supreme confidence in his ability, and that's a great quality to have in the corner. I know.
Did Dennis Allen just refer to playing cornerback on the Autobahn? Is that what he said? That's pretty awesome. Nice reference by Dennis Allen. Keep the defensive discussion going here. Let's talk a little bit about Craig Robertson. He's a leader on the defensive side of the ball. Kind of overshadowed by other players, those guys in the secondary, and the guys in front of him on the defensive line like Cam Jordan. But Craig Robertson has been a tremendous player for the Saints, especially with the leadership that he brings. And we've talked about this before. We talked this with Les East last week from CrescentCitySports.com, how for the first time in more than a few years, the linebacking core is set, right? They know who they are. They know what they're bringing back. They know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And Craig Robertson talked about how this linebacking core this year is just one big family.
I mean, it's family. You know, it comes to the point, I'm the old guy, you know, I'm the longest tenure, which is crazy. But it's now get to a point where we want everybody to win, and it's not like that everywhere. You don't get that in training camp. You got guys that just I want to do good, you know, so coach can see me do good. But we don't have that. It's more so like, hey man, like you're helping other guys, you're coaching other guys, especially the young guys, because we've been in this defense a long time. Like, I made a lot of mistakes. I made a lot of plays, so I can help a lot of the young guys. And now WD is now going to the second year, and Alex has been here. So it's like just as us banging ideas off of each other is really what makes us better players all together.
Of course, WD is DeMario Davis, and then Alex Anzalone is the other linebacker. He talked about Alex because here's a guy who's shown flashes of what he can do at the linebacking position for the Saints. He looks like Thor. He plays like Thor, but then he's always kind of nicked up a little bit, right? And this is what Craig Robertson had to say about his fellow linebacker, Alex Anzalone, having a full, healthy season.
Yeah, it was special. But, I mean, he's a special player. And I mean, I'm excited for him. I told him all offseason, like, hey, man, like, this is a year, like, you separate yourself. Like, you got a chance to really do something special just with him in general because he's so athletic. He's big, and, you know, him playing Mike was a first last year, you know what I'm saying? So him coming through, you know, year two to do the same thing, I feel like he's going to have a lot of growth in that area. And then playing with somebody alongside like Double D, you know what I'm saying, and all the sub packages, and, I mean, we got two athletic guys just playing, and they're both smart, so I like our chances.
I like their chances, too. That linebacking core is good. It's good. I'm going to say this. It reminds me a little bit of the Super Bowl run team because the linebacking core was kind of undervalued, right? There was a lot of talk about the back end and the front end of the defense, and the linebacking core was very solid. You had Scott Shanley, you had Scott Fujita. Neither one of those guys were great players, right? They were just good ball players, and they fit in well to what the Saints wanted to do defensively. Now, the star of that linebacking group was Jonathan Vilma. He was, you know, legit guy that they got from the Jets. I think Double D, as Craig Robertson refers to him as, could be that way. But the linebacking core could be good. I don't know if they have the depth, though. That linebacking core is going to have to be healthy. If they're healthy, they could be really good. But you don't know about the depth. I think depth is an issue at linebacker behind those three starters for the Saints. The Saints also added some depth in the offseason to the defensive line. Sheldon Rankin's coming off the injury. They lost some guys in free agency. So they went out and they got themselves Malcolm Brown from the New England Patriots, who just come off winning a Super Bowl. Big, huge defensive tackle. This guy is, he's the type of defensive player that you want to see absorb up two offensive linemen, and he can. He's that talented. Did his college at UT. He was a Longhorn. He was a rotational guy for the Patriots. I'd expect a bigger workload for him with the Saints. But this is what Brown had to say about getting a fresh start in New Orleans with the Saints.
Since I've been here, I feel good. And, you know, the camaraderie I'm building with the guys is good so far. And, you know, every day is just a building block. And we're just going to continue to build. And they're only on day three, first day of pass. So we got a long way ahead of us. And, you know, we got a long path.
Brown did make some comparisons. He says that he does see some similarities between the franchise that he's with right now, looking to win its second Lombardi Trophy, and a franchise that he played for that's won multiple Lombardi Trophies, the New England Patriots.
Definitely. I mean, work hard. We get out here grinding every day. Everybody's doing their job. I mean, it's going unsaid, but everybody knows what it's supposed to be, and they're being there, and everybody's out here working, grinding every day.
And another thing that impressed Brown, the Saints' new defensive tackle, massive man, is the fact that there is a ton of leadership on this team.
I could bring some, but there's already a lot of good leadership and already established in the locker room. You know, I'm just trying to get here and learn the plays, you know, do my part in the whole process. I'll get ready to play the whole season.
He could be a sneaky pickup for the Saints because we talked about it for a few days when they signed him, and then it just kind of disappeared. How many conversations have we had or has anyone had about Brown? We keep talking about Sheldon Rankin's going to be injured, had to be put on the unable to perform list to start training camp. Brown's a good player. Bill Belichick does not draft guys and develop guys who aren't good players. Plain and simple. Now, there could be question marks whether Brown fits what the Saints want to do defensively in Dennis Allen's scheme. Because Bill Belichick is notorious for having guys that he can use their strengths to the maximum amount of their ability and hide their weaknesses in his system. And then when they go to other teams, they sometimes flounder. They don't pan out. But Brown was a rotational guy. So, at the end of the day, he still brings you depth. And if he can be any part of what he was in New England, and they can build off of that, the Saints could have got themselves a steal in free agency when they brought in the big fella and poached him away from the New England Patriots. But look, training camp began Thursday when players reported. Friday, they got to work. And Craig Robertson talked about just the feeling about putting the pads back on, putting them shoulder pads on, putting a jersey on and a helmet, and going out there and getting a little hidden on. He talked about that great feeling.
Yeah, I mean, really, more so, it's best for both sides, for linemen, because they go all these practices we had with OTAs and then the 2 days before of not putting any pads on. And it's hard to block somebody nor, you know, shed and release as a lineman with no pads on. So it's good for them to finally get their hands on somebody and use their technique the way they're supposed to.
I love how Robertson just broke that. It's all about their technique, you know. He was more excited about the fact that guys will be able to go through their proper techniques than he was about just hitting someone. That tells you everything that you need to know about the Saints defense. Their mindset is all business. He's talking about the first time they put on pads for training camp, about being able to execute the proper technique, not just the feeling of being able to hit someone. Mindset's a little bit different. It's all business for these Saints this year. That's going to do it for our Saints training camp discussion, focusing on the defensive side of the ball. Obviously, we'll have more of this all week as Saints are now fully in training camp. And you can keep checking out 1037thegame.com for updates from Saints training camp as well. We'll have stories posted on the blogs day in and day out. We got to hit our final commercial break of today. Got to do some more stretches. Going to bring it home after that right here on Acadiana Sports Station 1037 The Game. Welcome back to the show. Just a reminder, guys. Hey, Gino DeLaFosse will be taking the stage this coming Wednesday as KDCG-TV presents the original Swamp and Roll music TV show taped live at Black Gold Casino in Doosan at 7 o'clock. And it's brought to you by LafayetteTravel.com every other Wednesday evening. It's a free show. Be on television. You can watch the Purdue show on KDCG-TV Thursday evening at 6 p.m. or online at KDCG.com. It's the original Swamp and Roll show Thursday evening at 6 on KDCG-TV. Find out more, including schedules, at KDCG.com. And if you can't go out and check out Gino this coming Wednesday, don't worry. Got a couple more Swamp and Roll dates coming up in August. August the 14th will be Gregory Lejeune and Cajun Heat. And then on August 28th, it'll be Corey Lede and his Zydeco band. So stay tuned for that. Make sure to check that out. Cody Schutz. Sir, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Way to close the show like it opens. That's awesome. We have a tweet at us here over on Twitter, of course. Doug Hebert, at Doug Hebert first, tweets at 1037 The Game. Kind of in response to our poll question, sort of, and then he gives another thought he's got. Doug says that he really likes Butler. He's got some kind of Marcus Colston 2.0 kind of feeling.
Has that feel to him, yep.
So that's Doug's feelings on our kind of
similar
poll
build,
question there.
Similar build, also from a small school.
Right. And then he adds another thought about Taysom Hill, and he feels that Taysom Hill, he absolutely has a job with the Saints, whether it's, you know, special teams, playing backup quarterback, or that gadget player. He has a job with the Saints, and he said because he paid his dues last year, and he showed that in certain situations he can be valuable for the New Orleans football franchise there. So some thoughts from Doug over on Twitter, Ray.
Big up to Doug. Thank you. We appreciate the feedback. If you want to know more about Taysom Hill and his mindset, we got a story right now on 1037thegame.com about how he's looking to make an impact for the Saints this year at quarterback, but he's all about playing special teams well. He's still team-first kind of guy, and he's learning more and more about the playbook, and Sean Payton's been impressed with his ability to be able to throw the ball as well. So if you want to check out about Taysom Hill, more about him, go to 1037thegame.com right now and check out our story about the former BYU Cougar and current fan favorite for the New Orleans Saints. Cody, we asked the people, do you think Emmanuel Butler is going to earn a roster spot this season? That's our poll question, which is up right now on 1037thegame.com. Give us updates on the results of the poll question, sir.
The update is that not much has changed. 100% of the people still saying that Emmanuel Butler will make the Saints roster. We need you to go vote on it as well, though. You can either go directly to 1037thegame.com, or if you're scrolling through Twitter, you'll see we put a tweet out with the poll question of the day. There's a link right there. Click that link, tap that link there, and it'll bring you to the poll. Give us your thoughts, Emmanuel Butler. So far, 100% of the people say he will be in the black and gold this start of the season.
That's correct. It's a good show today. Good show. Good job, Cody Schutz. Good job, sir. I want to thank our guest.
Takes a bow.
Jarrett Rozier from TigerDetails.com. Also, Jeff Palermo from the Louisiana Radio Network. Of course, more Saints training camp will be on tomorrow's show, so make sure to tune in for that. Programming reminder today, no Astros. Okay, they're off for travel. So it'll be the Jordy Holberg Show from 2 to 4 with Uncle Jordy, and then a full 3 hours of B2BS, bumper-to-bumper sports with the good brother Ben Love. So make sure to stay tuned for that. Dan Patrick's show is next. Y'all have a great day out there. We'll talk to you tomorrow. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.